Let go of everyday worries and find your calm with positive prayer from Silent Unity, the newest in voice-activated technology, available on any Alexa-enabled device like the Amazon Echo. Each prayer and meditation on positive prayer will help strengthen, guide, and comfort you. To enable it, just say, "Alexa, open positive prayer." You can ask for a specific prayer on topics like healing, prosperity, and comfort. Give it a try today.
Exploring our oneness with spirit and each other. Unity Online Radio. Welcome to World Spirituality, exploring the unity within all cultures and faith traditions with Paul John Roach, minister of Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas. Discover the universal principles present in all the world's religions and take an incredible journey to new understanding. Now, here is your host, Paul John Roach.
All right, so welcome to today's show on the Unity Online Radio Network. This is World Spirituality, and I'm your host, Paul John Roach, coming to you from Unity Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas. And today I welcome the authors of a beautiful, inspiring coffee table style book of poems, quotations, intriguing photographs written and conceived by Deirdre Hale, William Arntz, together with photographer, Andre Balog. It's entitled The Not So Little Book of Surprises. Deirdre is an artist and visionary. She's a former ballet dancer and choreographer and also a healer. She considers herself to be a modern day mystic. And William is well known as the director, creator, producer of the best-selling film, What the Bleep Do We Know, which went around a lot of Unity churches and other institutions and created quite a stir a few years back. And it's a project he began after a very successful career as a laser physicist. Andre is both a photographer with many awards and also an internationally known concert violinist. He's not with us today, but his images fill this beautiful book. So it's a joy and a pleasure to welcome Deirdre and Will to today's show. Welcome.
Thank you. It's just a pleasure to be here.
Well, you know, if you could sum up, you know, what's the purpose of this book? What did you hope to achieve with it? You know, what would you say?
Well, I would say that the purpose of the book is really to give the reader a pleasurable journey into a mystical experience. With the photography and the sayings from my life of teaching and working with healing with people for over 30 years, the feedback we get from people is it's inspiring, it's uplifting, and it's meaningful. So
yes,
that's our hope.
Yes, absolutely. And then the photographs are particularly they're crisp, aren't they? They're amazing, and they're not just straightforward photographs either. There's a lot of visionary stuff in it as well. So it creates a journey, if you like, into other dimensions, which is, of course, what you're after, I'm assuming, because,
yes,
you know, your writing and your poems lead us into other dimensions, don't they, to a greater understanding of who we are. We're so much more than just physical beings in a physical world. We're involved with tremendous levels of light and love and possibility.
Absolutely. And we, Will knows my work and has had my work for so many years, and he wanted to put together a book of my insight and teaching and the information I've received from the other side, from angels, from beings of light. And when we did it, we really were so captivated by Andre's photos. that we felt, wow, this can be like a movie in a book, meaning the photos mm-hmm. really, like we could have just done it without the photos, and that would have been fine, like everyone does a book. But with the photos, I just feel like, wow, it's this incredible, you really get to experience a deeper meaning of what those words mean. So it is a bit like a movie in a book.
Right, yeah, I like that designation of it, because it's true, and it has the lusciousness of cinematography almost, you know. It takes yeah. you on this wonderful journey. And like I said, I could keep coming back to the crispness of the photos. So, you know, that appeals to me too. They're very finely executed in the book as well. Surprises, little book of, not so little, because it's, like I said, it's a coffee table sized book, but book of surprises. Part of the spiritual path, it seems to me, is to be surprised, isn't it? It's to be taken out of ourselves, right, our complacent everyday lives, into another awareness, you know. C.S. Lewis famously wrote a book about his relationship with Joy Davidson, you know, that he found later on in his life, and he called it Surprised by Joy. But it's also about his spiritual journey. So it was two meanings to the book: surprised by this relationship, but also surprised by the joy that this relationship brought. And I think there's something delightful, isn't it, about being surprised? You know, so many of us are jaded. You know, I've been there, done that, got the T-shirt. You know, nothing surprises me. I've seen it all, bah humbug. But when you're surprised, you're in a moment of possibility, aren't you? In a moment of presence, if you like.
Well, that's...
Will, I'm going to let you...
take that. Finish.
I'm going to let you answer this.
Well, what happened, and I agree with everything you said about surprise. I mean, think about that. If you're no longer surprised ever, like you said, it's jaded. You're kind of like, you know, already have a foot and three toes in the grave. So,
yeah, but
the way the surprise concept happened was I got the idea to put this book together with the quotes and then some pictures. And as I started going through Deirdre's teachings, there's all these transcripts, and I started pulling out the quotes. Now, as a filmmaker, this is what you do all the time. You're going through transcripts and you're looking for those juicy little moments. And I started pulling them out. And I started noticing that Deirdre, because she spends a lot of time in the other worlds, she says things in a way that's surprising. She says it in a different way because she has a different perspective. And I thought, you know, I really like, and I found that the quotes that I picked were the surprising ones. So I remembered from my research that a surprise does a whole bunch of things biochemically to people. And basically the big thing is it increases the neuroplasticity, which allows the brain to rewire very quickly. So you think about transformation. Transformation takes you from who you were to who you are. When your brain rewires, that's what happens. And it really is a doorway to transformation. So sort of all this came together in about an hour one morning, and then it was suddenly the little book of surprises, and that's how the surprise factor came in.
Right, very good. And it almost also takes you from where you thought you were to where you are, right? Because it's so often we're already there, we just don't recognize it. We're so tied up in what we think we are rather than who we are in truth. And it's a surprise then to realize, oh my goodness, you know, I've known this all my life. You know, so I think it was Paul that said, you know, when it happens in the twinkling of an eye. In other words, it's immediate, isn't it? We realize, oh, surrounding me at all times was this wonder. You know, the kingdom of heaven is within me and around me, as Jesus said. It's already here.
Right.
Yep, that pretty well sums it up. And that moment, there's a great quote in the book where Deirdre says, you know, there's a moment. There'll come a moment when you shut your eyes and that reality is more real than this one. And uh-huh. You know, talk about a surprise. We're all so used to thinking that the real world is out there. But imagine shutting your eyes and suddenly you're in a state where that is the real world. Boy, talk, talk about a surprise, boy, oh boy. So
yes.
Transformation is pretty much, real transformation is always surprising.
You know, there's a lovely spread here on page 112, 13, and it's one of my favorites of the book. It's an image looking up, I think, into the cathedral there in Venice, as I remember. It's got
right.
Jesus as the Pantocrator, you know, the ruler of all, looking down from the dome. And then on the other page is some beautiful imagery of flowers and mountains in the Rockies or whatever, and some animals. And then you write, it says, that's why the saints have a halo, because there's all these halos around these images here, because all around them the apertures of light are open and shining, so they glow. And you can glow too. Isn't that beautiful? I love that.
Thank you. Well, that's my whole concept of radiance. And I was given the understanding of radiance about 15 years ago, deep in a spiritual retreat and meditation, you know, where God said that the saints, you see saints, well, they glow, that's because they are in radiance. And I said, well, what's radiance? And God said, radiance is when your soul is fully actualized in your body.
Mm-hmm.
So like the divine light becomes so bright, you can actually see it with your own eyes. And God said, this is the potential of every single human being. It's not like a few get it. It's like that's your potential, and your journey is to birth your divine self, your soul, into this world. And that's when you step into that miraculous life. And we all have that ability. We're here. That's what we're here to learn, that we all have this ability.
Right, yeah. And unfortunately, you know, I've been a minister now for 30 years, and it's been
wow.
a joy. It's been a joy, but it's also room for reflection, you know, that we can be teaching this stuff for so many years, and people are still, you know, locked into, I guess it's... you know, it keeps you with a job, basically. But you know, we take so long, doesn't it, to actually truly awaken and transform. We'd rather stay stuck in our conditioning, unfortunately.
Well, that is it. It's all about the choice. In the beginning of the Not-So-Little Book of Surprises, you know, I pose a question, or not I would obviously say that everything in this book comes from a divine realm, and I was the lucky scribe. But and that is, you know, we are at a choice point, and it's really all about making a choice. Do you choose to live in a limited ego state, or do you choose to find that point of light and then open it? Because every point of light, every moment of happiness, every moment of connection, every moment of beauty or of love is an aperture, is a doorway that we can actually go in and we can expand it. But what we tend to do is walk right by it, ignore it, not take it in, disregard it, and go back to the same old of life is miserable and this is wrong and that's wrong. But if we could just see, oh my gosh, oh, I just saw that child is so adorable, and oh, my heart just opened. If we could stay in that moment and then go into it and just imagine you're pushing the doors of love open, you can actually glean that surprise of awakening, that divine light. That's how we find it. And it's a choice. It's just that we forget that we have that choice every single day.
Well, I think we go from one extreme to the other. You know, we're either locked down into misery, or we're sort of blissing out. You have a lovely image of a toaster on fire. You know, you write, you don't just boom, you're enlightened. That doesn't happen. It's a series. It's a series, and they build, because the big kahuna, if it comes too early, you're toast. You're toast. You're in the psychiatric ward, or you leave your body. Time to go. Ooh, I'm in the light. I think many of us experienced that, you know, especially back in the 60s and 70s through spiritual and other experimentations, you know, to come have that transcendental experience. if you're not careful, though, it's not grounded, is it, rooted, if you like, in balance. And I think it's so important to have that balance. You know, I love the line, after the ecstasy, the laundry, you know, because you have to come right back to the ordinary everyday things, don't you? So you have to bring the ecstasy back into ordinary life. It's not about blissing out into la-la land.
Absolutely, and that's really what this quote is about. And that photo, actually, Will orchestrated that photo, ordered the toaster, and had Andre put it together.
it's a great
show. That was Will's great sense of humor. And that really is true. You know, when I had I've had several different awakenings, like we do, there's usually like a series. So one of the major ones where I went into experiencing being a part of all that is, I had this light come to me after saying the Psalms 91 1,000 times, reciting it. This light came every night, and I went into this light, and I really was born into the light. And I didn't know how to move. I didn't know how to move my hands, my arms. I was in this bliss, but I wasn't functioning. And then God came to me, and God told me, God said, okay, it's time for you to do the dishes. And then God said, okay, now you have to scrub the floors. And then God said, you have to clean the whole apartment, and you have to do manual labor now. That's the only thing you're allowed to do, because you have to anchor this light now. You've got to be present. So yeah, I started cleaning.
Very, very wise guidance, yeah. I got to tell folks about this picture, though, because it shows this shiny old-fashioned toaster on an old wooden table and with fire coming out. And we've all had that experience, you know, when the toast is overdone, you go, oh no. But then you don't see it immediately, but there's a face that's coming out of the flames and the smoke of you as you disappear, you know, disembodied form. And so there's a little laughter there, a little play on it. That you don't immediately see that face, but there it is. And the face is looking kind of winsome, you know. Oh, dear.
Right.
Didn't quite get it right. Blew it, gotta come back again. Here we go again. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so
you know,
very good.
When Andre, I had to make that picture, and I ordered an old toaster on eBay, and it showed up, and I told him what I wanted, the smoke coming out of it, and we went back and forth a couple times till I finally got it the way I liked it. And he sent it to me, and I'm like, oh, that's great, Andre, and it's funny, and it's like my whimsical sense of humor and whatnot. And I must have looked at that picture 5 or 6 times, and then about the 6th time I looked at it and I gasped. Oh, my God, there's a face coming out of
this. Yeah, there we go. Exactly.
Yeah, you don't see it at first.
No, it's very subtly placed.
And then it's like everything. Once you see it, you cannot see it. There's no way you can see it. So that's that was part of Andre's artistry in doing that. He would just, from time to time, he would slip these little things in. It wouldn't say anything. And then I would be looking at what, because some of those photos, some of them are just straight photos, but often he would go in and digitally manipulate things and add little things there. And he'd do something, and, you know, I'd see it, and I'd go, oh, my God, Andre, that's so great. So
yeah, exactly. Wonderful stuff. Folks, I'm with Deirdre Haidt and Will Arndt, and we're talking about their new book, The Not-So-Little Book of Surprises. We're at the break. We're going to listen to these messages from Unity for about 2 minutes, and then we'll be right back to ask some more questions about this fascinating book. So join us then.
If Unity Online Radio has helped you grow spiritually through programs like this one, please consider supporting this online radio programming. Visit www.unity.fm and click on Donate Now. Thank you for helping us continue to serve as the voice of an awakening world.
Thank you. Have you asked your soul what it wants? Or are you so busy meeting the needs of everyone else? Family, friends, children, bosses, that you haven't checked in with the part of you that matters most? Janet Connor asked this question and received an answer. Your soul wants five things. That's it. Five things. Your soul wants to connect with Source, commit to values, serve a purpose, express itself creatively, and last, it longs to create a beautiful, abundant life. Janet Connor teaches five wisdom habits that meet those needs. You can take each course separately or register for the complete Your Soul Wants Five Things series and receive $1,000 in bonuses for free. Visit JanetConnor.com and explore all five courses in her signature series, Your Soul Wants Five Things. Your soul will thank you.
The world is full of voices, advertising, television, politics, colleagues, family, and friends. All are too happy to tell us how to live. In all of that noise, it's easy to miss the one voice that matters, your own soul. What would happen if you could hear that voice? Imagine the clarity, confidence, and courage that would be yours and the life you could create. Join Janet Connor, best-selling author of Writing Down Your Soul, The Lotus and the Lily, and Your Soul Wants Five Things, as she and her guests explore how to hear the call of the soul and create the soul-directed life. Live Thursday at 1 p.m. Central, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Go inside to find.
You've been listening to World Spirituality with host Reverend Paul John Roach. To learn more about Reverend Paul John Roach, visit his website, pauljohnroach.com. Or if you have questions, email him at pauljohnroach@yahoo.com. We now return to World Spirituality.
All right, welcome back to today's show on World Spirituality. We're talking about the book, The Not-So-Little Book of Surprises, by Deirdre Haight and William Arndt, and photographs by Andre Balog, and a fantastic book of inspiration. And we've been musing on some of the spreads in here. I'm turned to page 84-85 right now, and there's a lovely, rather arresting image of... looking out of the car's rear view mirror or side mirror, and it says, of course, on it, as we all are familiar, objects in mirror are closer than they appear, and there's this huge image of an eye there, golden eye staring directly at us. It looks like an eagle or something, but or a monster of some kind, and it's and you know that things are closer. It looks already very, very close. So if it's closer than it appears, it's like, oh my God, I'm going to be devoured. And so it's it grabs our attention. But this is all the fears, isn't it, that crowd in upon us sometimes. You know, there's a famous line, they're gaining on us. You know, and this monster is definitely gaining on us, and we live life like this, you know, always on the run from real or imagined horrors and terrors, right? It's, life is full of things that we've got to be scared of, and maybe that was inculcated as children or just societally, maybe, you know, part of our evolution, but it's not the reality, is it? We have to uncondition ourselves and know that the beast is our friend, if you like.
Yes, exactly. That is right. And we, and what I was talking about here is that there's an energy, and this comes from deep in the study of the Kabbalah. So I've studied both the Christian and Jewish Kabbalah for over 20 years. And there's this, in the Kabbalah, there's this concept that the energy of destruction, or the what we think of as dark, you know, as evil, hatred, whatnot, that energy is consumes the light. It to live, it has to consume the goodness. It consumes the light, and all we have to do to change that is turn around and face the beast and look at it and say, no, actually, you cannot take this good energy anymore. And as long as we stay blind and we don't look at it, we don't look at our shadow, it will continue to follow us and consume us, because a bigger teaching, there's a bigger lesson under it. But we have to face it and say, no, I take my light back, and no, you cannot take this. Jesus talks about this in the book of Thomas. He talks about the robbers. The whole book of Thomas, is a great deal of it is about the robbers. And that's that Kabbalistic, that mystical understanding of how good and evil operates in this world, and that we are the ones to become the masters and to turn to the to evil and say, no. I'm not going to run from you. I'm not going to placate you. I'm going to say no, and I'm going to keep the light of creation. You can't have it. And right. Then the beast has to go away. It actually dissolves. It goes back from where it came, and the world is restored to order and balance. Right now, evil in our world is an imbalance of the energies of action and reaction, and give and take. That imbalance has become what we call evil. And the only way to bring our world back into balance is to send that that oil slick back to where it's supposed to be. And then God keeps this world in balance. Does that make sense?
Well, it does. And I think the essence of it is that the beast or the dark or whatever you want to call it, evil, has no power in and of itself, right? That God creates only the good. And so the beast is given power by us, our fears, our attention. And your quote here on that spread is, the light would exist just fine without the beast, but the beast would not exist without the light. And I think this is the key here. So therefore, the light trumps the beast. You know, the beast is dependent on us giving part of our good or our value away to it, and of course we have the choice, don't we, to say no to that. Like you said, we don't have to give away our power to those motivations or fears. That is not the reality of who we are. And as you referenced, you know, Jesus in the wilderness said a similar thing that he said, you know, he discusses in Thomas, and that's, you know, he said, "Get behind me, Satan." You know, the shadow is still there, but it's behind us now. You know, we're looking at the light. It's not that the shadow's gone, but it's in its right relation to us. It's no longer overwhelming us, right?
That's exactly right. It's in its right relation. And when it's in its right relation, it is a force that is necessary on this planet. The way things decompose when they die, they go back to the earth to be regenerated. There is a cycle of the seasons of winter and then spring, summer and fall, and that's a natural order. Where we've gotten out of order, Paul, is that we've given in to aberrations of that cycle by letting our minds, our thoughts, and our hearts dwell on jealousy, envy, comparing, feeling like a victim, poor me, hatred, prejudice, intolerance, blaming someone else. Though that's the beast, and the beast gets us when we allow ourselves the luxury to dwell on those feelings instead of looking at them and saying from a higher, okay, I'm jealous, let me look at this, and jealousy, you don't have power on me. I know that's not really who I am. I'm going to let you go now. And it's really that simple of having that internal practice, because there's no way you can live on this earth for a lifetime and not have these feelings and these human experiences come up of our ego. It's not bad that we have them, that we're human, we're broken, we're not perfect. But the key is to be able to look at them and to say to them, okay, I hear you, but I'm giving you no power. And
right.
That power is our light. And the minute we say that, the minute we restrain from letting ourselves go down those paths, an enormous divine light, an enormous love, an enormous spiritual power comes into us, and that's the power we must re-harness to heal our world right now.
Powerful words, yeah, absolutely. You know, I think Christianity does a bad job in some ways in terms of demonizing the dark. You know, instead of seeing it as part of us, it's put off onto the devil or some other imagery that then we can't work with anymore. You know, we got to fear it. But I like, you know, traditions like Hinduism where, you know, God has both a light and a dark side. You know, I was recently at a temple in an ashram in Wales, which is basically a Hindu temple, and we're at the Mahashakti temple, the temple to the Divine Mother, and it came came to me strongly, you know, that the Mother, the Cosmic Mother, is both terrifying and tender at the same time. You know, that there's forces in this universe that are just amazing. We'd be fried to a crisp if we got too close to the sun, for instance.
Yeah.
And yet, you know, at the perfect right distance, we are warmed and provided for in every way, and flowers can bloom and our lives can go on. But we'd be foolish, wouldn't we, to think that, oh, well, it's just sweetness and light. There's also dark forces and energies, but they're all part and parcel of the same good that is God. It's just that God is so much greater than, you know, our little humanness can take on at any given time.
Absolutely. I'm so sorry my computer did that. I apologize. It was so beautiful what you were saying. And it's so interesting. You just said that and a bird flew up to my window. and that's really it, is this. That's so, I couldn't even say it better, that's so beautiful and so accurate. You know, one little piece of history you might find interesting is that in the Old and New Testament, in Aramaic, in ancient Hebrew, there is no devil. That devil doesn't exist. There's a word, one of the many words, but one of the words is Yetzirah. That's Hebrew, and Yetzirah means an inclination to do evil, and it means, you know, the ego, where the ego can twist. But it doesn't say it is evil, it's just the inclination of evil. And
right.
What happened when the Old and New Testament were translated to Greek and then to Latin and then to English and whatever language, the meaning changed, and that's where the devil shows up.
Right.
So
there we
I know
go.
A lot of Christians might get upset when I say that, and I apologize. I'm so sorry, but historically, that's actually true, and you can do the research and find out. So there is like a we just got misaligned to what the real meaning was in the scripture.
Absolutely. I think Satan is only used three or four times in the whole of the Old Testament, you know.
Yep.
And usually when he shows up, he's working for God. So
right.
He definitely isn't separate from God. He's the part that tests us, if you like. And
right.
Even in the New Testament, you know, when Satan shows up, he really shows up as a tester, doesn't he? He tests Jesus. So it's just our adverse ego, you know, that wants to test us and make sure that we're motivated in the right direction, not a force of that we have to contend with in any way. You've got another interesting spread. Let's talk about this. It's page 56, 57 of Mannequins that look towards us. And the interesting question is, how do you know if it's God's voice or not? And, you know, mannequins are interesting, especially today when we're moving into this era of AI, artificial intelligence, robotics.
Right.
And you know, they say that we're going to be taken over one day by robots. Some people fear that robots are going to destroy us. I think Stephen Hawking said that. Other people think that, no, this will be a great benefit to the human race. But either way, we're playing with this idea of what's real and what isn't. And I think this is something we struggle with on a spiritual path as well, isn't it? Is, you know, how do I know it's God's guidance here? You say the false gods are knockoff, and that's true. It's cheap, shoddy goods here, but they look so attractive, and that's the immediate image that hits you when you look at this. It's very attractive women, but then you look closer, you see, oh, they're all kind of dead. You know, they're just images, just mannequins. Mm-hmm. So tell us about that. How do you know if it's God's voice or not?
Well, that's an excellent question, and a lot of people ask me this because people want to have that direct connection with God, with the angelic realm. I mean, everyone, you know, how do I know? And they say, oh, you're so lucky, you get to, you know, you hear them and whatnot. But I can say that it has taken me a lifetime to really have a clear channel and directive from God, from the light, from the saints, the angels, to me and me to them. And everyone has this channel or this direct ability to contact the all that is, every single person. What happens is our channel or that telephone line gets gunked up, and it gets gunked up with all kinds of voices and beliefs and all the stuff from not just this lifetime but another lifetime. And so the best way, a really simple way that you can clear your channel or your phone line, so to speak, so that you know that what you're hearing is right, is that is to go into deep prayer to our all-loving God and begin to have a dialogue. And you'll know it's God's voice when the energy and the information is only love.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning there's no anger, there's no hatred, there's no punitive, there's no you're right. There is only love and wisdom. You will know it's God's voice when you hear or you get a message that is something you never would have thought of. Like, you know, okay, I didn't think of this. Then you know it's God's voice. If it's a message of the story you always tell yourself and the ego says, oh, yeah, God told me this, that's not it. That's the false God. Because the ego will come in and say exactly what you want to hear to make you feel good. That's what the ego does. God will come in and you won't feel so good. God's going to call you on your stuff. So that's what I do and the practice I do of deep listening. When you want to speak to God, you need to get into a quiet place. You need to be in nature. You need to turn off music. You need to let your mind go. Watch your breath. Because all of the noise and the chatter and everything keeps us from hearing that real world of God. And we hear the knockoffs.
Right.
We hear all the knockoffs, and we see it every day. So try that. That'll help. That'll get you started. I'm saying that they're listening.
Wise advice. Yeah, and also I think is it for the benefit of all concerned? You know, if it's for all it, then we know it's not just an ego thing, because ego doesn't want it usually to be for the benefit of all. It wants it to be the benefit of itself. So, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, excellent. Yeah. Is Will still with us?
Yeah, I certainly am. I'm just taking mental notes of all of this. This is great.
Well, good. Would you agree with Deirdre on those points about how to know if it's sage and wise advice from spirit? I like what she said.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I'm sort of a third party, or maybe a fourth party, you would say, to some of these communications, because she and I will be talking. And the kind of the joke around the house is you never know who's going to join in on the conversation. So sometimes we'll be discussing something, and she'll say, "Oh, I'm getting a message here," And, you know, often when it comes in, if it's a message for me, she often predicates it by saying, oh, don't take this personal, I'm just the messenger, don't shoot the messenger. And then the words come in, and basically it's often something like, look, Will, you know, you're kind of stuck in your ego right now, and you got to look at the bigger picture. That is what you want, isn't it?
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah, and so like Deirdre said, on the one hand, it's loving, but on the other hand, they don't mess around. You know, it's like we're going to deal with the truth now. And so if you want to get in on the conversation is going to be about truth. And, you know, you're probably going to hear stuff you don't really like, because if you liked it, you'd already be doing it. So,
yeah.
You know,
yeah,
that's for, you just have to be humble. And, you know, if it really, really gets you worked up, you figure, well, boy, they really hit the bullseye on that one. So
there we go. Yeah. Push a few buttons. Very good. All right. There's another nice page, page 91, and it has a Tibetan tanka, a scroll with an image on it, and it's got a guardian protecting wrathful deity around there, Yamantaka, around, and then in the middle, though, instead of the image of the Buddha or whatever, or bodhisattvas, it has a young mother and her child at the grocery store, and she's pulling off something off the counter. And I love this because, you know, when I was a kid, I'd often see Jesus in my hometown. You know, I'd go around different places, go out to the countryside, and I could feel that the actual gospel stories were happening, you know, where I lived. And it made it very real, you know, as opposed to it happened 2,000 years ago in a sandy desert somewhere. And I love this image because it's the same idea, isn't it? And you don't have to go to Tibet. And what you've written at the bottom is the ego's like, whoa, wait a minute. You mean that yokel down there at the grocery store did a miracle? No. I have to go to Tibet if I want to see a miracle. And it's such a sad thing, isn't it? Because we put off our goods, you know, until we're in the right place at the right time in this imagined Shangri-La or whatever. And of course, I know I've been to Tibet, and it is a mystical and magical place. But I know that Fort Worth, Texas is also a mystical and magical place, right? Because wherever we are, God is. So it can be at the grocery store or anywhere. So this image really sparks that idea, you know, that the guardian deities are all around us wherever we are.
Exactly. I'm so happy you picked this page out. This is one of my favorites. And I'm actually the godmother to the little girl in the picture, Patience,
sweet.
And I know her mom, Ashley. And we shot that photo right at our local little corner grocery store. And that's it. That one of the like false beliefs we have to change is that a miracle has to happen somewhere else. Now, there are power places in the world. There are these incredible spiritual places. However, we've got to get back to you are a spiritual place. Like you, your body, you are a temple of incredible spiritual energy and power and love and miraculous ability. And that's what I want us to get back to.
There's an image that goes through the book and shows up in various pages, and that's the honey jars and the honey, and the imagery of that. Tell me about that. What significance that has? And by the way, the images are beautiful because you have this one on the back of the book, and the jars are full by this time, full of honey.
Yes.
And just recently poured in, obviously, because there's still bubbles of air in there. And the golden, it's just incredible. The golden color is just magnificent. Very inspiring, but obviously there's rich symbolism there for you, right?
Yes, well, the honey jars, this is a poem that was given to me. I heard this voice, and I just wrote down what the voice said. It's a very deep poem in the honey jars. It's a poem about our spiritual journey, who we are as a soul. that we are souls on a journey. We think we're an ego. We think we're a mind. We think we're what people tell us. But actually, we're a soul that has traveled since the beginning of time, since when we were first created, on a journey. And we've been searching to merge our self as a light, and our self as a corporal being on the earth. We've been searching to when the split happened, when separation happened. If you can imagine, you know, and God said, "Let there be light," and there was day and there was night. There was a separation between the realities. And we, part of us came into this physical reality, and in this physical reality, we're like, "Oh wait, how do I touch the other reality on the other side of the veil? I don't know how to get there, and I feel alone. I feel in exile. I feel isolated. I feel like I'm in a prison." So the light of our soul and our physical beingness, our consciousness, has been searching to find each other again and reunite. And that's what this poem is really about. And the jars of the honey represent your vessel, the vessel of who you are, this body that we're here in. And the honey, it starts out with the honey jars are empty, and we go on this journey until the great angel Gabriel comes and Isaiah comes, and we begin, then the honey begins to come back. And the honey, the golden light, is the color of our soul. Our soul is the golden light, like the sun is golden. That's the color of our human light. The white light is the God light that fills us, but our light is this golden light, and that's what the honey represents. So at the end of the poem, we have the honey jars are full again, because the presence of the angelic presence of the prophet, of the saint, and the human has merged again. And that is the journey. That's what we're here to do, to become radiance, to be this light. So that's that means.
Yes, beautiful, well expressed. So you're a modern day mystic, right? And some people say, "Oh, that's kind of mumbo jumbo. What's all this mysticism about?" But a mystic is not somebody that's involved with woo woo stuff, are they? Really, it's much more beautiful and profound than that.
Well, yes, and I'd like for Will to answer this, but I do want to say one thing, and that is that every religion was founded by a mystic.
Yes.
Because every religion, the founder of every religion, was a person who had experiences above and beyond the norm that went into the miraculous. And a miracle is mystical because it is from the mystery. It's beyond what we think could happen. So the mystic is really a part of every single person, but it's in our shadow. It has been forgotten. And my message is by saying, well, I'm a modern day mystic, meaning I like to wear designer clothes, I wear heels, I'm very much part of the world, is that I said yes and opened the door to this magical, mystical reality, which is so wonderful. It's filled with wonder and awe, and I just want everybody else to be able to have that experience too, because it's so great. So,
so you're a girly girl mystic. Is that what I'm hearing?
I'm a girly girl mystic. That is, yes, I will admit to that.
And Will is obviously a manly man mystic.
Yes, there you go. So,
well, you know, we're joking, but I think labels can often, you know, it's not about dressing up. I think that's what John Lennon said, you know, about the 60s, basically. All we did was dress up, you know, and it can be that sometimes. We can be fooled just by the costumes we wear, but when we reach another level of awareness, we can wear any costume we like, right? If you want to wear designer clothes,
you
can still be a mystic. You know, it's not about the way you look; it's about who you are in your heart.
Yes.
Well, can you hear me? My phone just got funky.
Yeah, no, it's good.
I can hear you.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
Good. The thing about the mystic, when I first met Deirdre, she was you know, as they say, in the closet about a lot of her perceptions and about the way her life is. And I started encouraging her, say, listen, honey, you gotta let people know. Let's stop being apologetic about it. And we've
right.
actually been working something in the future. We're thinking about doing a set of presentations called The Physicist and the Mystic. And the reason we're doing that is, for me, I was a laser physicist, and then I did computers, wrote software, entrepreneur. So I really come from that more logical side of things. Then eventually I sort of meandered into bleep land. But, you know, so for me, it's like where society is going is we've done the science now. We've done the technology. You know, we're just running down that path. But the next phase for humanity, I think, is embracing the mystical. So we've been talking about doing this sort of roadshow where with slides and maybe parts from the book and certain other readings where we talk about the physicist and the mystic and how these two seemingly disparate things are really doing the same thing. So that's just a little peek into what we have up our sleeve, because the idea of mysticism, all it is basically you have other modes of perception that are not based in the physical dimensions. So that's what a mystic is. And so for me, when people get all saying, oh, it's woo-woo, it's this, it's that, it's like, no, it's just another mode of perception that apparently you don't have because you're calling it woo-woo, and if you did, you'd call it reality.
Right, there we go. And, of course, the wonderful thing is we're finding that the teachings of the mystics over millennia are now being corroborated by modern physics and, you know, quantum mechanics and all this sort of stuff, you know, non-local reality, you know, the fact that we can be a tendency to a particle and a wave. You know, these are ideas that mystics have been holding for many, many years. So it's wonderful that science is kind of catching up in a way with some of the insights that have come directly to the human consciousness through mystical awareness, through direct perception. So, you know, I love that idea that, you know, they're complementary to each other, right? Just as you both are complementary to each other in your relationship.
Right.
Well, yes, and I also, because I have studied so much, I've just been an avid learner and come from a family of learners. One thing that I'm very aware of is that where science and mysticism it must marry is that in the olden days there was a lot of superstition.
Mm-hmm.
And what science does is it does bring us a rationality. And it does bring us out of some superstition that was very, very bad and very dark, such as thinking someone's a witch and, you know, burning them at the stake because there's no proof. So we definitely, that's to me is woo-woo. That's like there's no basis.
Yeah.
But then science came in, but then science went off without any connection to the heart, and science could bring, you know, could destroy our world. So now it's more important than ever that we have science and we have the true mystical understanding inside of a greater reality of wisdom for us to come together. I mean, our survival truly depends on this right now.
Can we have another show? I want another hour, Jeff. Can we just go continue? Because we're at the end of the show, and it's like, oh, my goodness. He just shook his head and says, no, we can't do it. Oh, well. But I hope everybody's had some fun and insight into what we've been talking about. Let me tell you about next week's show, and then we'll say goodbye to Deirdre and Will. Next week, college professors Mark Dennis and Darren Middleton join me. They're going to talk about Martin Scorsese's new film Silence, which is based on the novel by Suzuki Endo, and it's been a study of theirs for a number of years, its spirituality and its historical narrative, and so it's going to be a joy to have them back on the show again to actually critique Martin's latest movie, see what we think about it. So that should be fascinating. But right now, I want to thank so much Deirdre and Will for being on the show. and sharing their insights with me. Thank you.
Well, thank you. It was just a joy to be in here, and I just want to invite anybody, if you would like to know more about our book or about anything we've spoken to, please come visit me. I'm at DeirdreHade.com, and that's DeirdreHade. And even if you misspell it, it will come to me. So
there we go.
I would love to have that relationship with you.
Absolutely. Yeah, get the book, folks. It's a wonderful book. You're going to thoroughly enjoy it, be inspired by it. All right. So thanks, Will. Thanks, Deirdre. And we'll talk to you again, okay?
Beautiful. Okay. Have a wonderful day. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
Okay. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye now. Thanks for listening, folks. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in to World Spirituality with Reverend Paul John Roach. Join us every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Central to further examine the spiritual teachings and religious traditions of our world and to discover the universal truth principles present in all. World Spirituality, only on UnityOnlineRadio.org, the voice of an awakening world. This program is brought to you in part by Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas, celebrating the Christ Spirit in all people. Online at www.unityfortworth.org.
You know the saying, a good deed is its own reward? Well, moving toward a plant-based diet and vegan lifestyle is one kind and compassionate act that isn't just its own reward. It will also reward you with vibrant health, boundless energy, an easy way to keep your weight where you want it, and according to yogis and Unity's co-founder Charles Fillmore, even give a boost to your spiritual life. On Main Street Vegan, the radio program named for the popular book, Victoria Moran will make your move in a vegan direction easy, fun, affordable, and delicious. With enticing topics and entertaining guests every Wednesday at 2 p.m. Central Time, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Spirit of Recovery is the place where spirituality and recovery meet, where we support your spiritual growth. Reverend Anna Schaus, Ph.D., interviews down-to-earth guests who share with you how they keep going and growing in recovery. Spirit of Recovery is the place to get practical tips and join in lively discussions on topics that matter to recovering people. This program welcomes everyone who wants to know more about recovery. Join Anna and her guests live every Tuesday at 4 p.m. Central Time on Spirit of Recovery, where we talk about what keeps you growing. Only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Does the idea of being a vegetarian or a vegan intrigue you? Is it something you've pondered? Listen each week as Victoria Moran, author of Main Street Vegan, shows you how to make the shift to a sustainable lifestyle for both you and the planet. Each week you'll learn about the latest on the vegan life. It's not just for celebrities and moguls, but for people just like you who want to look and feel amazing, eat extraordinary food, help animals, and create a physical body perfectly attuned to spiritual growth. Guests will range from Unity ministers to vegan authors, activists, physicians, chefs, and even some of those glittery celebs. There'll be recipes, ideas, tips for going vegan at your own pace, and ways to make a difference for animals and the planet at every meal. Tune in Wednesdays at 2 p.m. Central Time for Main Street Vegan, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Let go of everyday worries and find your calm with positive prayer from Silent Unity, the newest in voice-activated technology, available on any Alexa-enabled device like the Amazon Echo. Each prayer and meditation on positive prayer will help strengthen, guide, and comfort you. To enable it, just say, "Alexa, open positive prayer." You can ask for a specific prayer on topics like healing, prosperity, and comfort. Give it a try today.